Chinook. It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Barrow, McGrath, Bethel, and Kotzebue have one, and so do Klawock, Imangak, and St. Michael. They all have an Alaska Commercial Company store. Those towns and villages are among the 18 locations of a mercantile chain whose history goes back before the purchase of Alaska. Barry Morris is the manager for the Alaska Commercial Company store in Fort Yukon, and he's something of an Alaska history buff. So I asked him about the history of what's generally called the company.
It's quite an old company. It goes back, the direct lineage of the company goes back to 1867, and it can be traced back further beyond that. And at the time the company was set up, commercial company was a fairly common way of describing a sales enterprise and that sort of thing.
And it's that sort of thing, not sales per se, that were the company's first ventures.
Well, it started out inheriting the interests of the Russian-American Company. The Russian-American Company had been set up back in the 1700s mainly to tap the fur-bearing seals from the Pribilof Islands. And at the time of the transfer from Russia to America, at the time actually it was called the Hutchison Coal and Company. And that company purchased the fur sealing rights from the Pribilofs from the Russian-American Company and started out that way. The name was shortly or thereafter changed to the Alaska Commercial Company. And they took the profits from the fur sealing industry and expanded and went into all sorts of different things, retailing and supplying the gold fields being primary at that stage.
Over the years and the stages, there were a number of changes of ownership and name for the company.
It was Hutchison Coal and Company originally. In 1901, they changed the name to the Alaska Commercial Company. And then shortly thereafter, they divided the company as it expanded into the Northern Commercial Company that took care of the mercantile side and the fur trading side of things, and the Northern Navigation Company that took care of all the river navigation and all of that sort of thing. It remained then Northern Commercial Company up until 1976-77 in that period, at which time the ownership changed again, and the what had developed into a major side of the operation, which was heavy machinery, was divested and maintained the Northern Commercial name, or NC machinery. And because of that, the mercantile side had to revert to the original name of the company, which was Alaska Commercial Company.
At the time that, say, the Russian-American Company started, and subsequent to that, I imagine that there wasn't a great deal of cash in the country. What was the medium of exchange?
Well, it was all fur trading, basically, where the Alaska Northern Commercial Company were, or gold, as time progressed and the gold fields became developed. A lot of it, where I am from, Fort Yukon, for many years, since the AC Company took over there in 1869, it was all in furs with the natives there trading furs for outside goods.
The trading post in Fort Yukon that later became the AC Company was first established by Alexander Murray in 1846. Then it was part of the Hudson Bay Company of Canada, though within the boundaries of the Russian-American Fur Company's turf. Even 40 years later, when visited by English explorer Frederick Whymper at a latitude of 66 degrees north, the post was considered Hudson Bay's most remote outpost. The store was actually part of a complex, a fort, as the name Fort Yukon implies. The original fort was built a mile up from the present village, but on a site that was eroded by the riverbank. Building on the new fort started in 1864 and was described by Whymper in his journals as having newly plastered walls, glazed windows, capital floors, open fireplaces, and a general appearance of cleanliness. But while the fort may have looked good to visitors, conditions within for the Hudson's Bay employees seemed fairly grim. There was a steady diet of moose meat and caribou, mostly dried and sometimes fresh. As William Dahl wrote in Alaska and Its Resources, published in 1870, the men should receive 3 pounds of tea and 6 of sugar annually to flavor their diet of dry meat, but I was informed that this supply was exceedingly irregular and often failed entirely. Both Dahl and Whymper report that when such supplies were available, they were given or traded to the Indians, as was the case with any goods and supplies that made it to the then remote post, a post known for the huge piles of furs that were obtained in trade for the blankets, guns, knives, axes, and cookware, goods that the company created a need for, all in the name of progress and commerce.
The company generally has progressed along with Alaska. It's been, because it was the only entity of government early on, really, the only real outside authority in some of the smaller villages, it's been both a seen the results of the change and has also brought about some of the changes, bringing like a cash economy to the native villagers and that sort of thing.
Also, I would imagine consumer demand.
Yes, of course, like anything, when a few goods are brought in, that creates a demand for more goods. And it, as those goods became more and more numerous, it became less practical to run it as simply a trading operation, trading one good for another. And this probably accelerated the change to a cash sort of mercantile system.
Do you feel then that one could say that the presence of the company enhanced a community or served to destroy it?
Well, of course, there's two sides to every question. I doubt that it has encouraged native and community culture continuing. It's really not done a lot in that respect, just by the fact that it was an instrument of bringing in trade goods and mercantile goods. On the positive side, of course, it has certainly helped to increase the standard of living in the bush over the years by bringing in these goods and by being a reliable source of materials and then a source to sell furs to. It has greatly increased the local economies in the various villages. So from that standpoint, it certainly has a positive aspect.
You were saying that the company actually had a certain sort of authority in a community. From where was this authority derived?
The absence of any other authority, I guess you would say. It's much like, on a smaller scale, the Hudson Bay Company in Canada, where when there's no one else there, it falls to the trader or the Alaska Commercial Company store manager in their early years to handle health cases, provide advice in medical care, handle disputes amongst maybe miners or locals, this sort of thing, just because there was no one else there. And like the Hudson Bay, it was early on became an institution in the bush and so had a certain authority just by that fact.
Do you find that in these times in Fort Yukon, that the position of AC manager still carries authority?
Well, certainly nothing like it has in past years, nothing like that at all, because of the advent of all the law enforcement agencies and social welfare agencies and that sort of thing. I would say there is a certain respect, certainly amongst the older people of the village, accorded to the AC manager just by virtue of the fact that he's the AC manager, until they find out otherwise that they shouldn't respect him for any reason. That's part of the enjoyable aspects of the job, is the respect that the older folks especially still accord to the company and by extension its employees.
Do you feel kind of connected to that whole sense of history in your position?
Very much so. It's one of the many positive attributes that I find working for the company. It's just a direct traceable lineage almost to Alexander Hunter Murray when he first set foot in Fort Yukon in 1847. I find it very enjoyable.
Murray and others like him came from a French, a Canadian, a Russian, a German, a British tradition of exploration and exploitation. Exploitation is a charge frequently leveled against the company. Do you feel that that's justified?
Well, it's certainly not justified in the present day. We have to respond to consumer needs like any other company, Safeway or anybody else. And if there was any hint of exploitation, we'd be out of business. I really don't think even, say, in the latter half of the 18th century on, that you could really level that at the company. It was more of a trading of advantages, I guess you would say, where obviously the operation was profitable, or the company wouldn't have been in business in such a difficult area. But I think on the whole, it was a good thing for the villages as well, because like I say, we did bring in a lot of items that wouldn't have been there otherwise and provided a cash economy.
In a number of now existing villages in the state, they exist because a settlement was established by other people. Hospitals, missionaries, schools, this kind of thing. Are there any communities where they became communities because there was a commercial company outlet?
Well, yes, there are. Fort Yukon was originally established by the Hudson Bay Company in 1847. In 1869, the Alaska Commercial Company took over directly from the Hudson Bay Company. At that time, had the Alaska Commercial Company not taken over, I'm sure the village would have withered away. There would have been nothing holding the people there. It was still a migratory existence, basically, at that time. And they probably would have migrated perhaps to Circle or somewhere else, and that might have become the regional center. I believe also like St. Michael, I believe, is another example where we took over directly from the Russian American Company. And the town was originally established as a Russian American Company post and probably would have withered away had our company not taken over.
Are there any cases where there was a store and the community left it?
Yes. Over the years, I think the Alaska Northern Commercial Companies have had posts or stores at least 100 locations, probably a little over that. And as populations shifted, especially during the gold mining years, a post would be established, the town would then wither away, and the post would then be pulled up. I think Hamilton is the most recent one down in the lower Yukon, I believe, where we had a store up until fairly recent years. And I presume the town found it necessary to change locations to shift. And of course, the store then had to go with it.
How many stores are there currently in the Alaska Commercial Company system?
Right at the moment, there are 18. We're really in a growing mode, I guess you'd say, at the moment, along with the state. And you almost have to check your watch to see if there's a new store coming about. I think the lowest point after the most recent ownership change we were down to was 10 or 12, I think. So we've just recently taken over the operation of the store in Barrow, the store in St. Mary's, and established a new store in Kluwak in southeastern Alaska.
When I was walking through the store, I noticed quite a variety of goods. Could you describe the kinds of things that are stocked in the AC Company store in Fort Yukon?
Well, it spans the spectrum of most anything you could think of, really, which is another part of things that make it so interesting. Ringer, gasoline-powered Ringer washing machines are a big item. Snares and snare wire, clothing, of course, foodstuffs, anything from 50-pound sacks of flour to cup of soup and modern convenience foods. Snowmobiles, large motorized machines of that nature, three-wheelers. Raw furs we sell. Hardware items, nails and that sort of thing, up to items like portable generators and that type of thing, magazines and comic books. It's just a real general store in the late 20th century. It's just like taking a general store from the Old West or something and transposing it to Alaska in the late 20th century.
Barry Morris, manager of the Alaska Commercial Company store in Fort Yukon, where he says soda pop at $4.20 for a six-pack of Coca-Cola, Banquet fried chicken, Pampers, and Yamaha snow machines are the big sellers. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.